You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode 44. Welcome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
In this episode, my guest is Cassandra Ferris. Cassandra is not a developer. She's not a tester. She's not a graphics person. She's not a UX person. So why is she on this podcast? It turns out that we need to know from other people in our industry that affect us that are not just developers. So meet Cassandra Ferris, recruiter extraordinaire. All right, here's my interview with Cassandra. You're going to love it. Hi, everyone. Today, my guest is Cassandra Ferris. Cassandra, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. And it's so exciting to have you on the show. I've been trying to get you on the show because I think you're very unique. I can say it easily that you are the most unique of all my guests so far. And that's because you're not a developer, but you hire developers. And you work in human resources. You're a recruiter. Is that right?
That's correct. I am in charge of talent management for a software development consulting company called Improving.
That's awesome. So I want to talk to you about all of the stuff that goes into hiring and what makes a good developer for you to hire, what do you look for and what do you not look for, or what do you try to avoid, all that, those types of things. But first, I want to ask you about something very interesting about your life. You did something in Mexico, and there's some story behind that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I went to college, and my minor in college was actually Spanish. And I spent two summers during college living in Mexico, studying one summer and interning with a human rights group the following summer. Came out of that experience and became Spanish-English bilingual. So being bilingual is actually the skill set that got me started in recruiting. My first recruiting role was for a diversity staffing agency, and I was in charge of hiring and human resource for temporary warehouse employees, basically. And throughout the day, the majority of my work was conducted in Spanish.
Did you find that challenging?
I did. So the biggest challenge when I'm going into a situation where I have to speak Spanish is just learning the vocabulary. So kind of picking up the vocabulary for kind of interviewing questions, HR issues, as well as the speaking the warehouse language was challenging and interesting.
Does that motivate you, the challenges? Is that what gets you going?
It's one of the things that gets me going, yeah. I like the challenges. I like helping people develop their careers as well. That's something I'm really passionate about. And in the case of the warehouse employees, several people were new to the country. Several were political refugees, kind of had other situations that brought them here. And so it was exciting to help people get their start here in America.
Yeah, this is so interesting. People have different backgrounds. We tend to assume that everybody has the same experience as ours. And I would never have known that this is how you got started. And this is, for me, a complete surprise. And it's wonderful because that reminds me that when I get to know people, I will learn about their unique experiences. And that's what's going to help me have empathy for different situations, which makes me a good person to be around, right? Because then I will not judge people based on outward appearances, and I will have patience to learn about their quirks and their unique situations. And I think that makes for a better workforce. What do you think, Cassandra?
Oh, definitely. And I think that's part of what makes a role like mine actually really fun and interesting, is getting to know different people, knowing their stories, knowing what they want to do and what motivates them, and kind of being able to empathize with all of their different situations.
Okay. So a little bit about you, Cassandra. We know that you are a recruiter. We know that you got started in a diversity-oriented setting, but we don't know much else. How do you define Cassandra right now? Do you see yourself as a 24/7 recruiter? Who is Cassandra Ferris?
Well, my role is talent management and community outreach. So it's kind of two pieces of what I do. The talent management component is hiring software developers, BAs, PMs, kind of everybody that supports a dev team, and then helping them grow their careers and their career skills. And then on the community end, I actually organize a couple of technical conferences. I speak at technical conferences, and I do some marketing as well for my company, and it all kind of ties together with just kind of growing the dev community, being involved in it, contributing to the dev community, as well as learning from it.
Okay. So right now, your job is to hire people. Do you also onboard people, or do you work with them once they're hired?
Yeah, I do onboarding. And then once they're hired, I help people. I'll have my employees will come on, and they might have a certain career goal that they're trying to reach, and or a certain skill they're trying to pick up. And over time, my role is evolving more and more into a role where I do a lot of that kind of mentoring and guiding of my employees.
That's really interesting. I'm wondering if you have to go to school for this kind of thing. Do you have to get a special kind of education to be a recruiter?
Not really. I mean, recruiters come from all different backgrounds. For me personally, I got my MBA, and my MBA, the focus was something called organizational leadership. And then the minor was marketing, and the organizational component, specifically the HR component of that, as well as the marketing, is what led me to recruiting, because it kind of marries human resources and marketing.
Okay. And so you got your MBA, mm-hmm. which is highly desirable as a degree, because then you can be a manager at a large corporation. I'm assuming that's one of the goals of getting an MBA. What was your first job after college?
My very first job out of college? I was actually a warehouse supervisor in a greenhouse. I worked for a greenhouse that grew all of the plants that they shipped to like a Lowe's or a Home Depot. And my job was to supervise the employees who worked on that warehouse line. That was actually also a Spanish-speaking job. And I started that job actually through a staffing agency, and then was hired on full-time to the company.
Okay. And after that, how long did it take for you after you left that job to get a recruiting job?
There were a few years in between there. I did some apartment leasing and some sales. And then as I was completing my MBA program, I was also selling insurance for Nationwide. And I, over time, decided that sales was not really the right role for me. It was a little bit too transactional for what I like to do. And so when I got my MBA, I kind of targeted the recruiting and HR world as a career. And I find that more rewarding.
So that was a conscious choice. It just didn't just fall into your lap. You wanted to become a recruiter, and then you had a plan.
Yeah, I wanted to do something with HR or marketing, and recruiting kind of, so I didn't necessarily set out to be a recruiter. I kind of fell into it given those two interests.
Okay. That's really interesting. And how did you start? I'm just wondering if my audience wants to be recruiters, they start off doing some kind of internship. Is there a path? Is there a corporate ladder that you have to climb?
There are all sorts of different paths people take to it. I landed in it in a supervisory role at the warehousing. And so I've kind of come straight from that path. And I think probably that MBA is what allowed me to skip over kind of the entry level recruiting. But there are people that go into recruiting right out of college. There are bigger companies that will kind of grow and build their recruiters. For me, the more conscious decision was to target the tech industry specifically. As I started to get to a point where it was time for a change from the warehouse job, I started wanting to be involved in the tech industry as a recruiter. And so that was kind of a more conscious decision for me.
Well, you know, the next question has to be, why the tech industry?
Because it's fun. It's interesting. I'm always, always, always learning something. Every day, every person I talk to, every candidate I interview, every event I go to, I learn something new. So it was partially the learning. It was partially a personal interest in technology, not necessarily as a programmer, but just in technology and the way that it impacts our daily life and the things that we can do with it. And also the fact that it's a growing industry. There's good stability, there's good security, very low unemployment. So there were a lot of reasons that helped made me target that industry.
Do you find yourself going to a lot of developer events and gatherings and meetups?
Yes, I am at several developer meetups per month. All right, so I do go to a lot of developer events. The company I work for actually hosts several of them in our office. And so I'll go to those, or I'll just go to the other ones around town. Also go to a number of conferences. I go to them because I like to, at a high level, understand the technologies that my candidates are working with and understand what the technologies do, how they're changing, what maybe trends are within our industry, and try to keep up to speed on those. In addition, I mentioned earlier that I organize a couple of technical conferences. I'm actually the president of a Microsoft-focused conference called DogFoodCon. That's about a 450-person conference. Has tracks for developers, DevOps, IT, DBAs, as well as a soft and professional skills track. And then I also do the marketing for a cloud computing conference called Cloud Develop. And that's just a cross-platform cloud computing conference. So definitely entrenched within the dev community. I also have spoken at a number of conferences and technical user groups as well.
All right. So you have your calendar full. You are immersed in developer culture. You want to be in the know and you want to be in the middle so you can attract the best talent, right?
That's
your goal. Now, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a person who goes to these meetups, who goes to these conferences, and he sees a person or she sees a person that is a recruiter, is a conference organizer yourself, but ultimately, this is all in the spirit of finding the best talent for you. And that person is interested in perhaps finding a better job, finding their first job, or just feeling out the work environment and trying to see, is there something better? But they're a little bit shy and they're really not sure what to do about that situation. But they are at that meetup and they're at that conference and you are there as well. What would you recommend to that person? Should they approach you? Should they try to email you? And if they do approach you, what's the best way of approaching you? What should they say to you?
Well, the recruiters are usually pretty easy to spot at events. And a lot of times we'll talk, you know, mention that that's what we do. Or sometimes if it's a user group, sometimes they'll let us announce that we're hiring. If it's at a conference, a lot of times I'm working at my company's conference booth. And so in either situation, the best thing to do is just to come up to me and chat. A lot of times how it looks is people will come up to me, they'll say they're looking for a job or their friend is looking for a job, and I'll have a short conversation with them about what they do. And then what I'll do is I will have them email me so we can schedule a longer conversation. Usually I'll give them my card, say, hey, you know, shoot me an email, send me a resume, and let's meet up for coffee or lunch or have an interview and just have a more in-depth conversation. But having that little, you know, 5-minute conversation at the conference or the event is a good place to start.
So that person is probably, the person who's trying to reach you or contact you, is probably in line. It's possible that there is a line of people. It's also possible that they're not really sure what to say. Should they say, hey, my name is so-and-so, this is what I do, if you have any good opportunities, let me know and move on. Or just strike maybe a more social conversation. Hey, how's it going? What's up? Things like that.
Actually, you can do either one. It's just kind of what you're more comfortable doing. If you're comfortable just saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for a job. Are you guys hiring? Or what skills are you hiring for, actually, is a better question, because obviously we're hiring. So saying, hey, you know, what skills are you hiring for is a good place to start. Or you can take a more social tactic. Maybe you saw.
Yeah. So first it was your cat. Now it's your dog. Now after that, I think I'm going to hear from your husband.
He's actually golfing. So.
Okay. That's good.
We'll hear from him.
Yeah. So do you know that I interviewed your husband a while back for this podcast?
Yeah. I was actually in the house while you were interviewing him.
And you were kind enough not to interrupt, which is.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. We both get each other's jobs pretty well.
So did you listen to that? What did you think about that interview?
I thought it was good. But he had some good points about kind of how to grow your talent. So
yeah, he's a great guy, and we've been in touch since then. And so everybody should check out his interview, Jared Ferris, and we'll try to put the link in the show notes. Also, there's a whole bunch of stuff that Cassandra mentioned about all these things that she's doing. We will try to have all of that in the show notes. So when you are listening to this episode, this should probably be episode 44. So you're going to have to go to mentoringdevelopers.com/episode44, and there you'll see the transcript for this interview, also links, all the show notes, and a way to, if you want to listen to it in iTunes and Stitcher Radio and Google Play and so on, then you'd find links where you can just click on it and be able to add it if you haven't done it already. All right, Cassandra. So it's fascinating for me because we're seeing your career, your life from the other side. And I want developers and wannabe developers or newbie developers, experienced developers, all kinds of developers and designers and software developers, I want them to empathize with your situation. Because recruiters, I have to say, they're not the most liked people in our industry. Unfortunately, what you do and what people like you do is essential for us. It is a service, but there are some issues with the way recruiters go about their business sometimes, and that creates a situation where sometimes there is even hostility towards recruiters. I don't know if you felt that.
I have. I don't feel it very much anymore. But early on, there was a little bit of, oh, what's this recruiter doing at the technical meetup? And I actually think I overcame that pretty quickly by being open about who I am and what my job is, as well as by my being at those technical events, not necessarily with the goal of hiring people, but more just so I could learn. Do I hire people out of those events? Yes. Is that the goal going into them? No, it's not the only one. So I think that it's, for me, it's been just building credibility and becoming entrenched in and part of our dev community and giving back to it and contributing to it. You know, sharing my knowledge about the things that I talk about and the things that are also important skills for developers, as well as just kind of helping support the community through sponsorships, through organization, through marketing and promotion. I feel like I've helped our community grow, and that's helped me as a recruiter. As far as dealing with recruiters, there are a lot of shady recruiters out there. I've actually had terrible recruiters contact me I had one try to hire me for a .NET developer position. I am not at all a .NET developer. I can write a little bit of JavaScript and some HTML and stuff, but haven't written a line of C# ever in my life. So it was a local guy, and I wrote back to him and I said, oh, what a coincidence. I'm a recruiter and I'm also hiring .NET developers. Let me know if you find anybody good. So I get that, and I get kind of shady recruiters that try to get me to hire their consultants, like subcontract them out. And sometimes those people aren't who they say they are. So there's a whole, even as a recruiter, I deal with some pretty bad recruiters. I think the key for how you work with a recruiter is you want to interview your recruiter. You want to get to know the recruiter, get to know their history, make sure they're actually listening to what you want to do. If you have friends who are working with recruiters, they can always maybe recommend somebody. But definitely do some homework and be selective about what recruiters you work with. I know a number of people who actually have had recruiters that they've worked with for several years on and off. And that's been good because over time, then you can grow that relationship and have that trust that you wouldn't necessarily get with just, you know, whatever random recruiter hires you off Dice or Indeed.
Yeah, especially if you're in a geographical area, if you're in a particular city and you want to stay there, then building that relationship is crucial because that would essentially mean that you have an agent. Like an actor in Hollywood will have an agent, and an agent will get a fee, sure. That's the way they make their money, but you know that the agent is working on your behalf, so you don't have to go and look for roles and look for things to do, right? As recruiter can be the same way. It can be looking out for you. And every time you get a new job or you get a new contract, they make some money, sure, but you also have jobs. So it could be a really good mutual relationship. And as you're saying, Cassandra, it can only happen if you have a long-term relationship. So recruiters have to understand that just trying to make the next job or just to find the next person and just to make their paycheck is probably not going to endear them to developers. And the developers have to understand that they have to be very picky and find the right person who has the right ethics, like Cassandra. So go ahead and use Cassandra if you are in the Central Ohio area. But there are other recruiters. I've known them, and they exist. But you have to find them. And those recruiters are not going to be pushy. They're not mm-hmm. going to make you do things that they're not good for you. And they're going to try to get you the best deals. This is very important. You need to make sure that you don't sell yourself short. If you're a developer, even if you're a junior developer, even if you're a first-time developer, or you could be a senior developer with some years of experience, there is something unique that you can offer to any organization. And if there isn't, if you think that there isn't anything unique that you can offer, then maybe you should think about it and develop something unique about yourself. It could be your personality, it could be your skill set, it could be a combination of a lot of different things. But you need to first have that unique selling proposition or unique attractive proposition. Then you need to let people know that this is what you have. And then your job is to find the recruiter or do it yourself, but you have to find the right fit with a company that appreciates those unique qualities. And once you do that, not only that the company will be happy to hire you, they'll probably pay you a lot more than any other company would.
Yeah, and a recruiter can be a resource, and working with a recruiter can actually be very efficient because we have, you know, one or two conversations with you. And out of those one or two conversations, once we get to know what you're looking for, we might have five opportunities that we can identify and discuss with you that now you don't have to go out and find because we've already found them. And we can give you some inside information that you might not necessarily see when you read a job posting online. So the online job posting is definitely written in HR language. Whereas if you find out about a job through a recruiter, you can usually get some insight on things like the company culture, or maybe some of the unique challenges that the project or the opportunity is facing. And a recruiter can also be a good resource for, as you alluded to, for things like salary, what the market salary is for a city. You definitely want to do your own research on that, but a recruiter can and should inform you if you're selling yourself short. I've had people who've come to me with salary requirements of $20,000 less than the market salary. And I told the specific candidate that she was worth $20,000 more than what she was telling me. And she thanked me for that. Ultimately didn't wind up hiring her, but she took another position that was paying the market rate. So she wouldn't have known that if somebody hadn't told her.
Right. And I think that there's a lot of arm twisting that goes on in our industry because it's competitive and it's lucrative. So for a recruiter that wants to hire for five different positions, if they can get all those five people in, they can get their commissions and move on. But imagine if you were a developer that just didn't know how much you should get paid. Is that a common scenario? I think it's a very common scenario.
It is. It's common, and it shouldn't be. It's very easy to find salary data online. And there are, you know, there's salary calculators and things you can go to that you can put in your years of experience, your skill set, and your geographic region. And it'll give you actually like a bell curve of what the salaries are for people in your region with that role. And some people just don't do that research. The other thing that I found is sometimes people are hesitant to even discuss salary, which can be a block to moving forward in the hiring process, because we, especially in the consulting world, well, actually anywhere, you're dealing with kind of salary constraints, whether they're by your clients, whether they're by salary bands, whether it's because the state says so. And so we need to know what your salary requirement is so that we know if we're in the ballpark. If you're coming to me with a $500,000 salary requirement and my position pays $150,000, well, there's not really a way that we can compromise on that. And those numbers are maybe kind of crazy, but that's, you know, it's just a conversation that has to happen and should happen fairly early on in the interview process, so that you're not, to be blunt, wasting each other's time if you're not going to be able to actually work together when it comes to the finances.
But you know why people do that? They don't want to discuss salary requirements. And part of the reason is they have been told, correctly or incorrectly, over the years, it's been hammered into us that whoever reveals their salary requirement or their salary constraint loses. So if you, as a candidate, if you say that you want to make $10 an hour or $10,000 a year, just a number, then that's your high watermark and you could be off. You just don't know. Maybe the position can pay 15, but you just didn't know that. That's why we are told, if you go to a college career center, if you go to any, if you just look up any article on the web that's popular about salary negotiations, the first rule of salary negotiations or any kind of discussions is never to reveal your salary requirement. You should know that, but never let the recruiter know. That's what we were told. So that's why we don't want to say it. But on your side, you are trying to find a match. I think that it's good to get a ballpark to say, mm-hmm. okay, you're completely off. This it's not going to work. But a lot of times what we hear recruiters ask us is not a ballpark, but, hey, what was your last salary? Now, that means that's your cap. Now, most people, when they're looking for new jobs, they want to make more money. They don't want to be capped on that, right? So this is where I think there is this disconnect. What do you think?
Yeah, so I do ask people, what's their targeted salary? A range is fine. A range of even, you know, a $10,000 range is fine. I do sometimes ask people what they're currently making, and a lot of times people actually just volunteer that information. And I know that if somebody's making $85,000, they're probably going to want to make at least $90,000 when they go to a new job, and that's perfectly reasonable. I don't think that we on the hiring end go into things saying, oh, you know, this person's going to make a lateral move or this person wants to take a pay cut. And at least of the recruiters I know, none of us are really incentivized by salary. As far as like our commissions aren't affected by what your salary is. The bigger impact, like I said, is on salaries is what the hiring managers, what the clients, what the companies are willing to pay salary-wise. And that's why it's such an important thing to discuss.
Okay, so let's talk about this new trend that you must have observed, that there are a lot of people now that are preferring to work as contractors as opposed to being employees. And I've heard a lot of different opinions. I am personally somebody who is also doing that, but then, you know, I go back and forth between this view and that view, and there's some good and bad in both sides. Have you seen that as a trend, or is it just me?
Yeah, so there are contractors, and there's a few different ways that works. So there are people who consult independently, like you, and just kind of do their own thing, find their own industries. And then there are people who are basically consultants within a consulting company, which is the world that I play in and I work in. So the people that I hire are full-time employees of my consulting company, but they are, you know, working for our different clients around town on different assignments. There are benefits to both ways of doing it, you know, whether it's on your own or whether you partner with a consulting company. And then even within my company, we do have some independent consultants that we partner with. And basically, it's a business relationship between their corporation and our company. And we act as somebody to just help them find projects, or maybe in the case of an independent, maybe sometimes they are too small to be able to get on the vendor list of a certain client, but we're on the vendor list so we can get them into the company that way. So it's a, I think it's a good thing for people to be doing independent consulting work, and you can, you know, still sometimes rely on a consulting agency and kind of a partnership relationship more rather than employer-employee relationship.
Obviously, some of the upsides are perhaps that you can get a higher dollar amount for every hour that you work. So your hourly rate could be higher. And if you are a contractor working in the US and you're working through your own company, you might be hired on a 1099 basis, which means that taxes will not be taken out. So you will be paying self-employment taxes. So the number looks a little bit better than what it actually is. So you have to account for that. So if you're making $100 an hour on 1099, you're not really making $100 an hour. You have to subtract the self-employment tax. So it's going to be more like $92 an hour if you put it on an equivalence basis with a salaried position. On a W-2, you don't pay the self-employment tax and so on. So you have to know that. But important thing is that you don't have to become an employee if you're not comfortable, if you don't need the benefits, and if you're not really crazy about the company or the people, but you need a job, you have another option. You can be part of a consulting company as an employee, where essentially you will work for different clients. So even if you don't like your first client, you might like the second one. So you'll have some kind of security. I don't think it's ultimately... I think that it's a myth that a permanent full-time position is absolutely secure. People tend to think that, but ultimately you can be fired from any company at any time, whether you're a consultant, you're a contractor, you work on 1099, or you work on W-2. But I think the important thing to realize is find your comfort zone, find what you're comfortable with. If you don't like the people you're working with, maybe you can have a temporary arrangement. But what I want to highlight is the fact that there are a lot of benefit differences between different types of employment arrangements people may have, right? So what are some of the common benefits, Cassandra, that people can expect if they want to be an employee at a company, whether it's a consulting company or it's a different type of company? What are the standard benefits that people can expect? And what are some of the optional but nice to have benefits?
So standard benefits are, things like paid time off, vacation time, sick time, holiday pay, insurance, medical insurance, dental, vision. Some places also offer like life insurance policies and disability insurance. Other benefits, 401k. And when you're talking to your employer, you'll want to ask, do they offer a 401k? Ask if they match your contributions to a 401k. Those are kind of the standard benefits. The other kind of things that employees should look for and be asking about, one big, big one in our industry, I would say, is what is the company's policy toward training and certifications? Is the company going to pay for you to get the certification you're trying to pursue? Do they pay for college tuition? Do they pay for conference registrations? What's their policy around all of that? That's a very important thing that I don't know that people outside of our industry pay as much attention to, but within our industry, it's, I think, very important to ask what the company is going to do to help you grow your skills, because that is, in our industry, we're not ever going to stop learning. We always need to be growing new skills, and we need our employers to support that. And I would say that if an employer doesn't support that, then it's not a very good place for you to work long term. They're clearly not invested in you becoming a better employee and in becoming a better programmer. So it doesn't make sense for you to stay invested in them.
Do you look for conference attendance as a factor? I'm sure that you're not the one who's going to make the ultimate decision as a recruiter. You are going to screen people and there is a hiring manager, but you would have talked to a lot of hiring managers and you spent years doing this. So I think you would know this. Do hiring managers look for people who are going to conferences, not as speakers, but as attendees who are going to different meetups and perhaps who are showing up at meetup events, or they have There's another thing that I've heard about recently is a active GitHub profile.
So not all hiring managers are going to ask about that. For me personally, it's a differentiator. One of my standard interview questions, if I don't already know the answer, is what is the community involvement like of a candidate? And it's not a deal breaker if they're not doing something community, but it's definitely lowers kind of their standing as a candidate. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be that you're going to every meetup under the sun. It can be stuff like just doing training even on your own, like doing, I don't know, Pluralsight training or pursuing some sort of a certification. You need to be doing something to learn continually. And if somebody tells me that they're not involved in the community and they're not continuing their training, I worry that they're going to become stagnant. And within, with my company especially, we value community engagement and community involvement to the point where everybody in our company is involved in the community in some capacity. So I think that's very important. For a junior developer specifically, it is actually a big differentiator as well. So if you are coming into software development, whether it's from a computer science college track or from one of the software boot camps, anything that indicates that you're doing something to learn about technology outside of your classes sets you apart because not everybody's doing that. So given two college grads or two boot camp grads, everything else being equal, the one that is building an app on his own or going to the JavaScript meetup or whatever is the one that I'm going to take as a candidate.
Okay. Imagine I'm a software developer who just got their first job, not a great job, but I'm doing it. And it's been a year, it's been 2 years, it's been a length of time. And I feel like my talents are not being utilized. I don't have the advancement opportunities. The company is not encouraging me to go to conferences or to become better. I'm at essentially a dead end job. And I now want to see what else is out there, perhaps get a job as a more senior person, maybe a mid-level person. I don't want to get another entry-level job. A company that appreciates somebody who wants to learn and will essentially hold my hand a little bit and help me grow. Now, that's what I want. And what do I have to do? If you're somebody who's recruiting for that type of position, what do you want to see in my resume? And again, what do you want to see when you talk to me?
Well, if your company's not encouraging you, you can take initiative to do things on your own, whether it's, you know, taking classes online or going to meetups, doing something to grow your knowledge on your own. Your employer should support it, but they might not always necessarily do that. In general, once you get past about a year to 2 years of experience as a developer, a whole bunch of opportunities will open up just by virtue of there being a lot of demand for mid-level developers. And so one of the biggest barriers, I think, to starting as a software developer is getting that first 1 to 2 years of experience. Once you're there, you have all sorts of options. And when you're ready to start looking for something new, you want to start that process early. What you don't want to do is you don't want to wait until you're so desperate to get out of your job that you take the first thing that comes along. Instead, you want to, when you're making that first move, you want to do some research. You want to look at market salaries. You want to look at the types of companies within the area. Maybe there's a specific industry you want to work in that you could target. So you want to do a little bit of research and you want to start, updating your resume, reaching out to your network. Don't necessarily even throw your resume up on a job board yet, but start putting out feelers and having those conversations early so that you can give yourself a few months to find the right job.
I want to know about how to craft a good resume, right? For somebody who has a couple of years experience, maybe not more than that. There are different formats. I just want to have an idea of what you think makes a resume that gets your attention.
So there's a few things. It used to be that resumes were not supposed to be more than one page, and that kind of harkens back to the days when resumes are a piece of paper, and you only want to look at one piece of paper. Well, now that they're electronic, it's okay if they go on to 2 pages. As you get more senior, maybe into three. The biggest things that I look for on resumes are, I want a summary of what you do, like a quick little top of your resume summary about you're a developer with this much experience and this is what you specialize in. From there, I want to see what technologies you've worked with. Obviously, a chronological list of jobs that you've had. And on those bullet points where you're talking about your job, I want to know what you're doing. I see a lot of resumes that'll say things like wrote SQL queries or wrote stored procedures or developed .NET applications. That's great, but what are you doing? I'd much rather see developed .NET applications for insurance rating software or, you know, developed SQL queries for retail data. Something that talks about what the software you're working on does, who the users are, how it ties into the business, something that gives some context rather than just a list of technologies. If you're applying for a .NET developer position, it's safe to assume that you're writing C#, like that's implied. So what are you doing with that C#? What unique components have you created, and how are you contributing to the project? It's all very important to me.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing to hear. Because the reason people do that, essentially what we've been told, is that you need to have these keywords in the description of those jobs. So people are searching for C#, Java, Ruby, SQL, whatever. And they don't want just what we've been told is that if you have these technologies only in a list of keywords at the top, then people will believe you less. They want to know, where did you use these technologies? And I think that's probably what's making a lot of developers put those skills and emphasizing those skills and those technologies inside their job descriptions, individual job descriptions. But that's why we don't think about the function. And that's very interesting. I think we have evolved to a point where things have standardized. As you're saying, if you're a .NET developer, you're using C#. Well, that's no surprise. Obviously, you are. But what you're doing with that will indicate you, first of all, what industry you're working on, what type of applications you're making. So I think it's, for me, that's a good reminder to stay away from very, very keyword-heavy resumes and resumes that read more like a description. Now, am I oversimplifying this? Because a lot of times what we have is bullet points, right? Job name and bullet point. And every bullet point is use this and did this. But
yeah,
what I'm hearing is that probably better to not worry about short phrases and bullet points and action words like we've been told in college, and just don't worry about that. Maybe if it goes to two lines, just a description of what you're doing.
I guess I want to clarify my statement. So you do still want to call out those languages within your bullet points, call out the technologies, but give a little bit more detail about what you're doing. Created JavaScript components for, you know, an updated retail website is much better than wrote JavaScript. Like, just let us know what you're doing with the technology. Bullet points are good because they're good for readability. And I do think that action words are still important. So design, develop, create, architect, you know, all those sorts of things are good ways to start those bullet points. I don't necessarily like seeing the resumes that I'll see periodically where it's like a paragraph underneath every job. It's hard to read. It's hard to extract the pieces of information that I need. I do want to touch on kind of the keywords and the keyword component of resumes. So one of the reasons for that is that sometimes you apply for resumes online or you post your resumes on job boards and they have to be searchable, and resumes get parsed and they pull out the information and the technology. So if you're taking that kind of approach to your job, where to your job search, where you are putting your resume up online and seeing what comes out, or just kind of blindly applying to companies, yes, keep the keywords in your resume. I just don't think that's necessarily the best way to look for jobs. I think it's better to go through your network, go through people you know, and kind of try things that way first. And in that case, those keywords are a little less important than they would be if you're just putting your resume up on a job portal.
Right. And job portals are like shark-infested waters, right?
Oh, they're terrible.
You get a lot of recruiters that call you and contact you and email you because your information is there in your resume. And an overwhelming majority of these people that contact you don't really have any way of hiring you. They just want to see if you bite. And if you respond to them, then they will try to, then they'll start the conversation. So these are like mass emails people send, automated emails, and they take a lot of time. And I think this is why there's such a bad reputation for recruiters in the developer community, because we get these emails every day, so many of them, and most of them are just spam.
I'll let you in on a little secret. So candidates also do that. I think more of the job board resumes that I get are terrible resumes than not. There are companies that will actually spam recruiters with resumes for a lot of times their subcontractors that they're trying to hire, and will just spam us with all of these resumes that have nothing to do with the position that the person is applying for. And so we get that as well. And so job boards are a frustration on our end. In addition to the fact that we know we're competing with every other recruiter in town to try to get a hold of you. So I am very rarely on job boards. I don't use them all that much in my recruiting. I think in the past 2 years, I've hired two people off a job board. That's all I've hired, that I've like gone out and sourced them off the job board and hired them.
That's an incredible thing to hear. And that's where all of our energies are spent. If you're a developer, you're looking to get hired, the first thing you do is post your resume online and maybe apply for jobs or just wait. And like we said, most of the times, people that contact you are actually not going to be the right people. But if you know somebody like Cassandra, somebody who's taking personal interest in your career, then you have a better chance. Not only that you have a better chance of not wasting your time, but also for getting a job where the chance of you actually getting hired are higher, and also you're probably going to make more money.
Another thing, actually, a way that you can use the internet that is a very effective way of applying for jobs is, rather than posting your resume on a job board, update your resume, create a LinkedIn profile if you haven't made one. Yes, you're going to get bombarded with you're going to get contacted by recruiters. But what's nice is if you make a LinkedIn profile, you can actually be proactive in your job search, and you can find, there might be a company that you really want to work for. Well, you can go on LinkedIn, you can find a recruiter, a human resources person, or maybe it's a developer that works there. Maybe it's, you know, a project manager that works there. Find those people and contact them through LinkedIn and ask about jobs that way. That way you have a little bit more control over what you're applying for and who's getting your resume and who's seeing it than if you're just blindly post online.
Yeah, I think that's a really good advice. So I think we're coming towards the end of the interview. It's been an amazing interview because we're finally getting to hear from a recruiter, somebody who will not spam us, but will listen to us and find the right fit for us, right? So we appreciate that, Cassandra.
Thank you. I'm going to shameless plug here, but I actually do a conference talk called Job Search Questions You're Afraid to Ask. Those slides are posted up on my LinkedIn profile, and the talk actually covers basically when is it time to look for a new job, what should you be asking about, touches on some legal issues, things like non-compete and intellectual property, and gives you some guidance for how to make a decision about what you want to do. When I created that slide deck, I created it to try to be something that can stand alone as a resource. So it's something that, you know, might be a good idea to review if you are looking for something new and kind of looking for some guidance. It's not by any means comprehensive, but it does have the aggregate of a lot of years of interviews and a lot of years of helping people through job searches, kind of things they should be asking about that they don't necessarily know.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Why don't you send me the links to your slides and your conferences that you go to, anything else? We'll make sure that we put it on the show notes so people can go to mentoringdevelopers.com/episode44 and just have all the links right there so you don't have to take notes. If you're driving right now, don't try to take notes right now. Wait until you go home, go to the website, and then you'll have all the information. So, Cassandra, it was such a pleasure having you. And before we go, I'd like to ask you if you have any final piece of advice for people looking for jobs.
I will. Anybody who's ever talked to me in person knows this, but I will talk all day long about the importance of having a network. So start going to user groups, start going to conferences, start meeting people in our industry. When you meet those people, then stay in touch with them. So you meet somebody at a conference. After the conference, send them an email, send them a tweet, a LinkedIn, however it is that you like to stay in touch. And grab lunch with them every once in a while. Grab coffee with them or just have an online conversation. Because then when you're looking for a job, you can always tap into your network and ask about, you know, if they know of anybody who's hiring. That's for 22 months straight, everybody I'd hired had been through word of mouth, through network. And then I had one guy apply for a job off a job board and I hired him recently. But it's super, super important to have a trusted network of people that can help you through your job search and that you can also help through their job searches. So that's, I think, the biggest piece of advice I give is get out, meet people, help them out when you can, and form some relationships.
I think I fully endorse this recommendation. This is awesome. If you don't have a network, if you don't have a mentor, if you really want to talk to a recruiter and get an idea for your skill set, where you stand, you can contact Cassandra, and we'll have all the information in show notes for how you can contact her. You can also email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. You can tweet at me at mentoringdevs. And also you can go to my website, mentoringdevelopers.com, then slash, and then episode, the number of the episode. You can look at any episode. You can comment on it. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play. You can find the podcast. You can comment on it. We're looking for responses and feedback from all of you, because we can then shape the podcast to match what you need. Also, as I've mentioned before, if you go to mentoringdevelopers.com/list, then you will be signed on to an email list and you'll get a 5-email course where I talk about the 5 best ways of finding success as a developer. If you want to know my thoughts on that, and this is really good advice, that if I can say it myself, then all you have to do is mentoringdevelopers.com/list and check out Cassandra's profile on LinkedIn, get in touch with her, and I'm sure that she'll take care of you.
Cool.
All right, Cassandra, I'll see you later.
All right, thank you. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show. You can read the highlights and show notes with links on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode and the number of the episode. For example, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode10 or /episode25 and so on. Let me know what you think about this episode. If you'd like to ask a question or if you have a comment, you can email me at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Oh, and one more thing. I really want you to be part of the show, even if you are a little shy. So go ahead and type mentoringdevelopers.com/join in your web browser. This will open a Google form where you can tell me what topics interest you and what dates and times you're available for about an hour or so. Everyone is welcome, and I would be thrilled to get a chance to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you at mentoringdevelopers.com/join.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.